We have various understandings of this. Now, we start from one. We'll make it easy for you by giving you the sheet, and later we'll write something. Hopefully you'll be able to notice it on the board. One of the interesting things about depression, it's like the problem of alcohol or drugs, or even sometimes abuse, spouse abuse. It does not just affect the person who is having the mental challenge. That person normally is most affected, but it affects those who are associating closely, intimately with that particular individual. Just like there are therapy groups in different parts of the world for alcoholics or for drug addicts or people addicted to various things. But then there are also groups for helping those who are friends, relatives, parents, children, who have to associate with those who are undergoing such issues. So there's all kind of fallout. It's like some of you probably know or have experienced who perhaps have had or have alcoholic parents, and you see what happens to that particular person, but you also have experienced what happens to yourself and to others who are in association. So in many, many parts of the world, there's like millions and millions of people who are seeing the whole world through this vagueness, through depression. Every day is a difficult experience for them. There's so much fear, so much anxiety, that everything they do is a struggle if they do various things. I mean, there are many people who depression is so intense that they just stay in bed, or they just avoid eating, or so many issues. So we're dealing with the fact that it affects an individual, or affects people, it affects those who the person associates with, and has amazing fallout. Now, interesting.
Yes. It's
a little warm, I think. Is there a way that these windows can be open? You know the room better than I do. I don't know. Does anybody know if this can open up the room? Take some of your sweaters off. When Krishna says, Bahunam janmanan mante janavan man prapajante, Prabhupada explains, report, about how rare it is for one coming to devotional service. And he also explains that one of the qualities, one of the attributes, we would say, that brings a person to devotional service is some basic disgust with material energy. In other words, if we don't have a certain amount of disgust, disdain for what is ordinarily considered normalcy, what people normally do, then this is somewhat a disqualification. Someone who's very excited, very hyped up about leading an ordinary life, that person will not be a good candidate for devotional service. If they're really thinking that they can actually be happy by doing ordinary things as people who are fully conditioned do, then this is a disqualification. We see that Shattu Vidha Bhajang Temang, Shattu, we see four types of people come to devotional service. There are those who come out of looking for wealth, those who come out of distress, those who are curious, and those who are seeking knowledge. So there's only one type who's really coming seeking for knowledge. The other types, there's some problems there. And so it may be due to certain frustration because someone is not feeling they're sufficiently financially endowed. It may be to certain types of frustrations and distress from social, psychological, political, religious concerns. But this is a big category. Someone is curious, and their curiosity may even have to do something with trying to be freed of certain problems. And then there's that category that comes out of knowledge. So, for many, many, many people who come to devotional service, they have come because basically they do not fit in with normal material life. And this has been to their credit. Because of that, they are desperately looking for an alternative. Because of this, they are pretty strong about not wanting just to do orthodox things. So that's good in one sense. But many times, what has brought them into devotional service is certain dysfunctional patterns within themselves or within their environment. And because of some of those dysfunctional things, it's made it easier for them to say yes to Krishna. Now, karmically, Krishna has arranged so that such person can say yes. Because if one is not sufficiently pious, they can have certain issues in their life, and they won't say yes to Krishna. They'll curse the Lord. But there are those who are pious, who say yes, but some of them, their coming is really due to issues that would be considered to be rather negative. Now, if such persons are not somehow integrated properly within the devotional community, then even though those things may have brought them into the devotional environment, they'll cause certain destabilization and problems within the devotional community. Those things, let's say someone was abused by the mother, by the father, by the uncle, by the cousin. Somebody had some near-death experience that was very heavy. Somebody had some tremendous sickness. Whatever. Some problems. Somebody who was very introverted. Some things that normally wouldn't be considered so wonderful in material culture. But those things have helped this pious person to say yes to Krishna. So now, if they integrate themselves gradually into transcendental knowledge, then this becomes an asset. But if not, then it's like people coming together who have come out of various intense reasons, come together and they associate, and it is intense. It's one of the reasons why community is a very intense expression. Because literally, we are purifying ourselves in association like a hospital. And so people have come who are sick, but to different degrees, people are taking the medicine. You know, a hospital is one of the worst places to go? Because a hospital is an environment that's just full of disease. You walk into just an atmosphere of all kind of contagious disease, all kind of physical and mental problems, because people have basically come there because they're sick. And so the Krishna Conscious Institution is also, it's a spiritual hospital. People are coming who are sick, but at least we are trying to work on it, whether materialists or not. So the first thing we're looking at is that candidates for devotional service, one of the qualities is a disgust with material nature. And so that in itself means that person has a certain mental focus that is not ordinary. And many times they are saying yes to Krishna due, looking for wealth, distress, some of these issues. And we see that more people come, one in one category comes out of knowledge. And there's also a fine line between what would be considered some mental challenge or mental breakdown and sometimes some spiritual curiosity, desperation, emergency, or even insight, which later we'll have a chance to talk about. The second category, we have a question here. Who contemplated suicide before joining ISKCON? Many of us, before we came to Krishna consciousness, we were so fried, so distraught, so disturbed with practically everything, to the degree that some people were on their way to commit suicide and they saw a devotee. Some people were planning it and they got a book. Just around the time they were planning it. Some people had tried it and recuperating and got a book. I mean, it is awesome. Sometimes the intensity that one has just before Krishna arranges to make a contact. If we go around the room, if we had time, we ask you how you came to devotional service, we'll find maybe about 75% of people in the room were in a tremendous, tremendous, desperate state where they were just thinking, what is the value of life? What is it? What is everything about? They were crying, they were praying like anything, they were fasting, going through all kinds of changes, but they wanted to know what is truth. And because of the genuineness and the desperation, Since Krishna is responding to everyone's desires, the aggregate of our desires. But because we became so desperate that it allowed us to be able to make a higher contact. How many people, how many people before they came to Krishna consciousness, they were feeling extremely desperate. They were questioning everything, wondering what life is about. Just raise your hand. You know, probably 80-90% of the people, if we're honest. See, so about 65-75% of people raise their hand. This is because we did not want to accept what people are normally doing, or we had been there, done that, and considered there must be something more. How many people in the room were even contemplating suicide before joining? Raise your hand. Usually I get about 1/3. Here you have about 1/4 because some of you are timid. But just what you saw is quite awesome. About 1/4 of the people in the room. Very interesting. Which helps us to realize that, you know, coming to Krishna consciousness is a very intense experience that we were having. And Krishna made an arrangement based on our desire to know. If we look at number 3, psychosomatic disease. So just keep that in mind, that when we come into the process, 4 types of people come. Most people do not come only out of knowledge. And even sometimes those who come out of knowledge come with the most frustration. Because to a certain extent, material knowledge brings pain. The more that you know materially, without having an understanding of transcendence, the more you begin to realize that something is wrong. Some of the most intelligent people, supposedly in the world by whatever material intelligence is, are often philosophers. And some of the most intelligent of the philosophers are what is called existential philosophers, who often have a ideology that everything is absurd. It's absurd to live, it's absurd to die, it's absurd to make wealth, it's absurd to be poor, everything is absurd. Because materially speaking, everything is absurd. That you work hard, you do, you struggle for in so many ways, and you live to, you know, according to what part of the world you're in. Some places the average lifespan is only 45 years of age. Some places the average lifespan is 50, 60, 70. I think here maybe in the 70s. But it's still absurd that you live only for 70 some years if you live an average lifespan and then you die. And all that you've done, and sometimes if you're very successful, it's even worse. Because before the body's put into casket or cremated, the family members are already fighting over the estate. Huh? So all that you acquired now, it just brought so much anxiety to your family members that they're trying to grab it, and sometimes litigation goes on for the rest of their life, or family members become ardent enemies of each other. So it is absurd in one sense. The more you know, the more maturely, the more you begin to realize that something is wrong. Something is quite not happening. Something is not quite wonderful. So, whatever the case is, we see that there's a chance that one will have to deal with some mental confrontations. Psychosomatic disease, number 3. The mind is so powerful. We understand from Bhagavad Gita that the mind can be our greatest friend. It can be our greatest enemy. So the mind has its ability to control the body. For some people, it's so intense that just from their mental reflections, their body gets paralyzed. There are certain types of diseases that are directly due to people's psychological state. There's what is called psychoneuroimmunology, immunology, which simply means how the mind affects every aspect of the physical body. Affects the immune system, affects the degree of recovery, etc. So the mind is so powerful that it's like another entity that's just trying to harass you. We see how Raghunath Das Goswami, some of the Goswamis, how in their songs and their prayers, they are addressing the mind like it's a foreign entity. Because the mind basically is our greatest enemy. It is really just getting some demands from the senses. The senses have some desire. for some connection. And they send a command to the mind, and then the mind is not connected with transcendental knowledge. The mind becomes a slave to try to fulfill what the senses want. The eyes, the nose, the tongue, the belly, genitals, all trying to experience, and they say, mind, do something. And then the mind works to try to fulfill. So, many people, the mind is so strong that they can't control what the senses are requesting. We all have experiences. We hear these little voices sometimes, huh? Sometimes the mind gets so crazy. You are walking across a bridge. It's like somebody whispering, jump, jump. You're walking down the steps, and there's a little old lady in front. And the mind says, push her, kick her. Some people, they don't have the ability to check that. You're walking by, and there's this wonderful store, and it's all glass. And the mind says, throw a brick through the window. Some people, you know, when they hear that, they can't check it. We all hear this kind of noise from time to time. Hopefully we don't act upon it. But some people do. Because we understand that until we're able to separate ourselves from the body, the physical as well as the subtle, then there's every chance that we will give in and we will respond to it. In the medicine, they have what's called the placebo effect. Any of you know what that is a little bit? Placebo effect? Yes. So every medicine is tested by this also. For instance, when a new medicine comes out, they test the medicine on a few subjects, and then they'll just have a pill that's just a sugar pill or it's just candy or whatever, and they also give it to a certain number of subjects just to get an idea of if this thing really works or to what degree it works. Now, one thing they keep finding out is that often they give people the sugar candy and it works. So for years and years they were trying to figure, what's happening? We just gave the person some sugar candy and it worked. So they try to look at that quotient in contrast to what the pill, what an actual medicine can do. But not so long ago they found out that one of the reasons that the sugar pill or the candy works is that it has a lot to do with what people are thinking is happening. Someone is given sugar candy and they're told that this will help your malaria, it'll help your cholera, it'll help your heart disease or whatever. And then the person's heart gets better, the malaria goes, the cholera goes, and all they get was a sugar pill. Well, what they began to find out is that as you are thinking something, that sends messages through your body. It affects your hormones or endorphins. And so just feeling good, just thinking something is going to help you, the body has its way of producing its own medicine. And so it's not just the pill or not the pill, what the pill really is, but also in just thinking that way, the body has its way of working and building up itself. It releases certain chemicals in the body that are healing chemicals. Now you see, you take the opposite of this. If the mind is not feeling satisfied, if the mind is disturbed, if the mind is experiencing stress, if the mind is fearful, then the same mind sends chemicals, negative chemicals, in the body, and it causes a problem. Sometime back, I was speaking at the yearly National American Medical Association in America. I think you probably have here also, I'm sure. Once a year, all the doctors, they come together and they have their conference. So I was doing two things. I was speaking in the family practice session, but I was also speaking on the power of the mind on the body. And so I was addressing particularly the element of love. I think some of you maybe have read some of my books. I write about all these social, psychological, sort of spiritual things. Any of you have read some of my books? Okay, so you are not find me so foreign then. So I'm sort of eclectic in one sense. So I was at the American Medical Association, and I was speaking particularly about the potency of love. How love really heals, and how lack of love kills. It's been scientifically proven that when people feel alienated or when they do not feel love, and I talk a lot about this when I do workshops and things on community building, that there are 4 to 5 times more susceptible to premature death, and about 5 times susceptible, more susceptible to every type of disease. Now think about that. Someone who is feeling good about something, their mind releases chemicals that act in healing the body. Someone who is not feeling good, someone who is feeling sad, depressed, alienated, not cared for, not appreciated, not valued, they are about 5 times more susceptible to almost every type of disease, 4 to 5 times more susceptible to premature death. We would say roughly about 4 or 5 in both cases. To premature death, it means they'll die earlier, and it also means that any kind of disease, they're more susceptible to it. I was just talking with Rabbi Soup before I came over, and I was mentioning, now we're dealing with so many more issues in our movement of all different calibers. And so I was saying that as leaders, we have to be very careful about the stress factor. Because as one is experiencing so much stress, stress either engenders or it amplifies any type of problem. Any type of physical problem you may have or mental, that the stress factor will amplify it. It's something maybe dormant, stress will bring it out. You may have it in a minute case, but then it'll become chronic. One has to be very careful. This is how powerful that the mind is. So when the mind is not feeling good, adrenaline, when you're fearful, or when you're not feeling loved, what's called the hypothalamus, neurotransmitters, I don't know if it sounds too technical, but what happens is that throughout the body, then the cells are like attacked by the mind being depressed. So if the mind is too disturbed or depressed, then it's like our minds act as like enemies in attacking various organs in our bodies. Many people who come down with chronic disease, heart disease, cancer, whatever, it's after a death, a divorce, after some great disappointment, because the mind literally they starts attacking the cells, and then the cells become diseased. So these things shouldn't be so surprising us. We know from Bhagavad Gita how wretched the mind can be. And as devotees, as we're constantly trying to control our minds, we see that even though we've been chanting and doing so many things for so many years, sometimes the mind just flips. And of course our duty is to bring it back. So this is how important it is too for us to have loving Vaishnava relationships. That it saves our doctor bill, it helps us to be more productive, it helps us to be able to access our devotion better, because we know when the body gets sick, it becomes hard to be able to try to do service or to think of Krishna. Now, number 4, there's various types of depressions. There's one type called unipolar depression to bipolar. You don't have to understand all these terms technical, but just the basic essence of what we're discussing. This will help you and will help others in the present and especially in the future, that we're going to be confronted with this like anything. As a matter of fact, it's a little metaphysical, but some of you have noticed that since the turn of this millennium that you've found that your mind is giving you more trouble. And many of you are finding that than ever before in your devotional life. I travel so much and I'm finding devotees are saying this. And there's a reason for it. Because there's a lot of more subtler influences. And so what happens is that the mind sometimes even gets occupied by, you know, anytime you walk into an environment, you're picking up on the energy of that environment. Thoughts are like electricity. And so also people are carrying their ideas, they're carrying their desires, their anxieties, their fears, their lust, their greed, enviousness. It's all within the subtle body. And so as more and more people are fried, burnt out, disappointed, drugged up, etc., then as we move about, we're literally getting drained and bombarded by such people and by such environments. And as the earth planet itself is a living entity, Mother Bhumi, everything is alive. The earth is alive, is one living entity. The moon is one living entity. The universe is a living entity, the galaxy. So every living entity has ways how it is to be treated, to be able to maximize its ability to do the natural thing. And every living organism, if you do not treat it or honor it properly, there is trouble. So there's been so much abuse to Mother Bhumi, huh? We're rupturing the womb of Mother Bhumi by drilling the oil wells and by toxic waste, by all kind of issues. And so we see an increase in earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, famines, all over. So this then is a body. And if a body is constantly abused, the body tries to find ways to cleanse itself, to replenish itself. Just like sometimes when we have germs have intruded into our body. In some ways, the way the body tries to deal with it, you get fever, you get diarrhea, vomit. So it's a way of sending a signal that there is foreign intrusion, and now the body is trying to work on the intrusion. So the earth planet itself is being intruded upon, and because we are occupying this space on the earth, and we also have physical bodies, that we are more and more likely to be susceptible to all kind of influences. And so where devotees are not being very focused in their devotion, where they're not being project-oriented, or they're not going more internally, then there'll be so much emptiness in the mind, so much lack of fulfillment, so much lack of direction, and what'll happen is that one will become more susceptible to intrusions. In a day or two from now, I'm going to talk about some things about inattentive chanting. As we talk about different states that the mind experiences, different altered states. And there's a certain states that there are things that are good at each state, there are things that are also negative, and there are things that align themselves with various states of consciousness. And something happens when we have unattentive chanting that is very dangerous. So what I'm saying, in essence, and I'll talk about it more, is that as devotees, we are in a very glorious position, but also very dangerous. When you take to spiritual life, you're no longer the same, especially if you initiate, you're no longer the same. You're marked. You are marked by the parampara, but you're also marked by the demons. The demons know where the bhakti is. They know the devotees. It's like sometimes some of you go in sankirtan, or you're shopping, or you're doing something. You're not even in devotional garb. But sometimes you meet someone who's pious, and they just have a liking to you because they're picking up that there's something special about you. But sometimes people just get disturbed just by your presence. Because if they are too sinful and you are carrying devotion, your presence just imposes upon them and makes them feel angry. And they say something harsh, they're rude, they curse at you, whatever. So demons, the big demons especially, they know where the devotion is. So the danger is when we take the devotional service, and if we're not acting properly devotionally, then it's like a soldier going out in the battlefield with their uniform on without their weaponry. Does the enemy say, go back and get your weapons? So the enemy says, you are an easy prey because you are not protected. You do not have your weapons. One becomes a casualty. So as we build up, you'll begin to see why sometimes devotees are becoming casualties in various ways, or even sometimes having more problems than they did when they came into the devotional environment. So this unipolar depression is a type of depression where it is just this sort of emptiness constantly. And it's a different degree. Some people have it so bad that they are unfunctional. They do not bathe, they do not eat, etc. Others have it where they try to hide it, but it just surfaces from time to time. They have this gradual gloomy mood, or they dive into frustration easier than most people, but it's there. But the bipolar, manic depression, is more difficult because this is highs and this is lows. There's some people who have it, the manic, where they're just super active. They're into all kind of grandiose things. They're thinking that they're Lord Chaitanya, they're thinking that they're Krishna, thinking that Jesus Christ, thinking that they're Napoleon or whatever. Or they don't sleep sometimes for days. And then the other is the low. So some people, they have high sometimes, they have low, they have high. Now, there are people who enter into our society who sometimes have this manic tendency, not so much the depressive side, but they have this kind of energy of wanting to control people in an unhealthy way. And so they may find attractive a kind of autocratic society where authority figures really have a lot of sort of leeway. Just like you have sometimes people who are pedophiles who come into schools, nursery schools, places where children are, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, or clubs, because they know they have the chance for that. So sometimes we have people who have a kind of a manic sort of type personality, and they can do a lot of powerful things, a lot of wonderful things, but they have sort of a mental challenge, and that there's a heavy autocraticness that they just have to control people. So they want to be in situations where that is there. We also have people who have an over dependence, who just want to be told how to brush their teeth, tie their shoestrings, wash their clothes, this and that. People who practically can't function unless they're told almost every single detail. Our society also draws people like that, who genuine, who in a material society would have trouble doing things because they have this kind of heavy codependency that they're drawn to such an environment. That's not necessarily bad. It's bad if it stays only at that level. But because they're pious, they come to Krishna, and they have a chance to get purified by that. But these are some patterns, you know. We have other people who are schizophrenic or who are heavily, heavily mentally disturbed. And almost every temple, every now and then, you get somebody who comes like that, who may even join. Sometimes they are coming because their minds are disturbed, but inwardly they're crying out. And inwardly the super soul is letting them know or getting them to feel that there is some shelter, there's some relief, there is some knowledge, some aid. So people will come like that sometimes. And as much as possible, if there are ways we can help them, of course, we should. So number three is alcoholic influence and heredity. That just as people can come from alcoholic parents, and they have the gene, the parents have it because they got it from their parents, grandparents have it. So some of us, we may have certain genes, because again, keep in mind, the body is a machine. Some of us are carrying certain genes that will be more prone, make us more prone for alcohol or drugs or for certain types of mental disturbances. It doesn't mean one cannot rise above that. Just like we all come into devotional service with something. We have different types of credits, different types of debits. Excuse me. So for some people, they come into devotional life, they just move so fast, everything is so easy to them. Well, they paid some heavy dues in the past, their last devotion was of a high level, and so in this lifetime, they're taking off where they left off. Take the converse of that. Some people have a great, great difficulties because the quality wasn't so good. In this life, they're trying to do their devotion, but it's like they're weighted down. So also, just as the mind often is affected due to the genes, heredity, and environmental influences we know are always there. One can obviously become Krishna conscious, but it may be a little more difficult if they're coming due to mental challenges due to some genetic factor. So with alcohol, with drugs, with some mental ailment, then often one is more prone to experience that. So some of you who may be having that kind of difficulty, especially if you look at your mother. If your mother has had the gene, you're more likely to be a carrier. And for a girl, if your father has alcohol problems or mental ill problems, mental incoherences, then it's more likely that you may be haunted by that. To the degree that we take to the spiritual process, then all of these things, of course, can gradually be less of a disturbance on us. But, in fact, they will have some effect. I'm going to jump over Dark Night of the Soul. Tomorrow I'm giving Bhagavatam class, and I was asked either to choose a verse or to speak on something related to the course. So we're only going to have a few days, I think 4 or 5 days. I'm going to do my Bhagavatam class and give certain verses from the Bhagavatam and Gita or so, and talk about certain things, about a certain type of depression that really has a lot to do with spiritual unfoldment. So we'll skip over that. Number five, neurosis versus psychosis or psychotic. See, there is a certain type of mental disturbance that you can be freed of through what's called talk therapy, through different types of processing, through therapists that you can be assisted. But just as there's about 150 different types of causes for mental illness, some types are due to allergies, some types are due to sugar diabetes or to blood level, some mental illnesses is due to tumor. I mean, there's just so many, many things due to certain attachments, certain fears, certain losses, certain problems. So it's sometimes very difficult to treat such things because there's so many ways that it can appear. What's been the most dominant variable in treating mental illness
is that no one theory or no one school is more successful than another. But what has been the most dominant variable in helping someone is the relationship between the client and the patient and the therapist. That means when someone is feeling that they can be helped by another person, much of the help is already in place by the caring and the confidence and the trust. And in this way, you help to empower the person to work on their immune system that helps them to deal with whatever the issue is. So this is important, again, for us as community, in our communities, of just how important relationships are, the dynamics of being able to trust and to care for each other, to feel valued, etc. And the opposite, when one doesn't feel valued, what in fact happens. So the other type is when it is a biological problem, some biological or chemical imbalance. And in this case, it can be from nutrition, from vitamins, etc., some brain damage or whatever, and it needs a certain different type of treatment. So you have these three or so dominant cases. You have a case where it's a person who's having trouble just trying to cope with life and the different setbacks, and because of the mind going too much into attachment to the situation, and there's a problem. Then you have the problem of people who have some physical situation. And then you have a problem, maybe we'll jump to it now. You have a problem of possession. So many people who are walking on this planet now are possessed. We normally think possession is when somebody is just babbling in the mouth and doing crazy things and whatnot and look weird. Well, that may be the case. It's a very serious possession. Like we have now an increase in serial killers. Sometimes these people have been talked to and there are books being written on some of their lives. One of the things you'll find in these serial killers is that the majority of them speak about hearing voices. That they're hearing voices talking to them, telling them to do these heinous things. And they feel practically no relief until they do some of these issues. Well, many of these people, they have been actually, their bodies have been occupied by disembodied entities. Or now people doing all kinds of rituals and things and it invites all kind of lower forces and lower presence. So, just consider, somebody who kills 30 people, 25 people, cuts off their body parts, eats them, that's not an ordinary murder or criminal. That someone to do such vicious things, there's something really strange, extremely strange and perverted about them. So some of these people, their bodies have been occupied by another presence. And that presence is dictating, that presence is pushing, coercing them to do various things. More and more people are undergoing this these days. Why there's such an increase in these kinds of crimes? Because more and more people, as they are having trouble trying to cope, or as they are not engaged in some type of sadhana, it's becoming so important now that if people are not engaged in some type of sadhana, they will not be able to fully use their free will. There's all kind of mind intrusions, mind control things that are going on. Some of the airports now, there's music that's being played, and then words that's being spoken behind the music. Your conscious mind doesn't hear it, but your subconscious mind does. And some of the supermarkets here in Europe, and also in America now, they're finding that just by repeating certain words, do not steal, do not steal, maybe less people steal, or they market some product today, you know, buy such and such cereal, buy such and such washing powder, and they find that it works. Although the conscious mind doesn't hear it, because the conscious mind is only hearing the music. But it is played in such a way, spoken in such a way, that it enters into the subconscious mind. This is increasing like anything all over the world, that people are more and more being imposed upon without knowing it. So with these kind of commercial impositions, and also the impositions from some of the so-called negative forces and entities, that more and more people will find themselves pressured to do things, will find, mood shifts. Some of us notice that sometimes. Sometimes in the same day, in the same hour, first part of the hour you're feeling enthusiastic, In the later part of the hour, later part of the day, you feel drained, you feel sad, you feel angry, you feel disturbed. Well, this often has to do with the fact that we're not protecting ourselves sufficiently, and we're getting bombarded by so much of mental influences. Just in thinking kind about somebody, you are sending a message to that person. Thinking evil, thinking bad, thinking disturbed, what is it about making offenses? You're attacking that person's consciousness. So imagine in one day's time how much attacks are going on in so many ways. Especially as you have to be in mature energy, dealing with people, and some of you are managing things and charging things. Some of you are here, there. And so every place you go, it's like you're getting covered by whatever the person is carrying and whatever the environment is. See, in one sense, there's no such thing as neutral association, in a mature sense. Every association, there is a sharing. And according to what is the dominant consciousness, that is having a greater impact on the environment. And this is why we have to constantly have good sadhana, reading, chanting, as we cleanse ourselves from so much of the stuff that we're picking up as we move into various types of environments. So that means we're saying literally people are getting influenced more and more by ghosts, more and more by subtle presence. As people engage in satanic worships, as they're so much captured by lust and the mode of ignorance, then often we have in America, maybe you have it here, what's called time sharing, where you have one building, one apartment, and many people are using that. Sometimes people have one body, but it's being used by many different personalities. And so they're noticing now there's multiple, what's called a multiple personality disease, where a person switches into a whole different mood, and it's like a different person. In many cases, because it is. Because there are different presences within that particular person's being. Now, something about that person's karma and their present status that invites these things to come. It's like a rat likes to go where there's trash because it's like it's being invited. So there are things that people are doing. You know, they're so caught up now with all kind of self-centeredness, with greed and tension and frustration, and they're taking so much drugs, intoxication, eating abominable things. So by that, their bodies become much more susceptible to different types of intrusions. And this is why we'll find the last few years, and we're going to see in the next decade, we have more and more people doing serial killing because of the mental challenges and the intrusions and the influences that are there. Now, I'm going to go to one or two other things that I wanted a little time for us to talk, even though today I'm doing most of the talking. The other days we'll try to be more interactive. I want to touch upon this number 8, and I'll come back to 7 later. Why do you think women are usually more depressed than men? Statistically, it's been proven that women are more likely or more prone for depression than men. What do you think?
More sensitive.
Yes. Hormones.
Maybe they express it.
Maybe they express it more. Yes.
Less opportunity to engage in other things.
They're more restricted in certain ways.
They
get pregnant. That should be joyful, isn't it? Shouldn't it? Men can't do that. We're limited. We can't bring. all of these things are actually there. When you are not able to control your environment, then there's more chance for depression and disturbance. You're more sensitive, then you're picking up more things in the environment. And often people are feeling certain things, but they're not communicating. Women are known to express more than men. We have more tendency to shut down. So, less in control, I have number one. Of course, hormonal, menopause. And men also go through a certain type of menopause. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that at another time. Another day. This is very interesting. I often do keynote speeches at most of our social development conferences and some of our Grihastha conferences. So sometime back in Alachua, I was doing the opening speech at our Grihastha conference there. Why Sannyasi Grihastha conference? I don't know. Then maybe I kind of joke when I opened up. I says, "We're probably wondering why Sannyasi speaking at a Grihastha conference." I said, "Probably because we've created most of the problems, so we should bring about some of the solutions." But my background is I'm some little knowledge in international law and psychotherapy.
But also, I'm a very community conscious person. Most of my projects are about community development, community building, etc. What happens is very interesting. When one is going through midlife crisis, we all experience various things. We're kind of looking at the past and wondering if we did the right thing, if we made the right decisions. We're not so sure about our present. We're a little concerned about our future. So that's there with most people. Even if we weren't devotees, many of us would be going through a midlife crisis now, and it'd be a very difficult time for us. But an interesting thing happens. When a woman is in her, say, 40s or so, if she has had some abuse, now in America, 30 to 40% of every boy is abused, and 60% of every girl. Tremendous statistic. This is in the secular world. Hopefully your situation in Europe is not such. Maybe it's similar. But what happens often is that, especially in the case of a girl, if she's had some abuse, sexual abuse, if she's had certain abuse, then often it can be repressed somewhat successfully, but it begins to come out, problems come out again in her 40s. So sometimes a woman is going through some mental and physical disturbances, and she doesn't know why, her husband doesn't know why, but sometimes it's due to things that have happened earlier in the life that were somehow repressed and begin to come up. Another thing is that when a man and woman are in their 40s or early 50s or whatever, it's an interesting time. Their children are adults now. Children have gotten married. Children have gone off to university. For the man, now most of you are grihasthas, and many of you will be grihasthas, so these points may be interesting. Sometimes it can save a relationship. For the man, it can be one of the most blissful times of his life, because it's like now, you know, his children are gone off and he doesn't have to worry about them so much, and they're married, they're going off to school, and he's been a successful father to a certain extent. For the woman, it can be one of the most depressing times of her life. Why do you think that often happens? Attachment to children?
Getting old?
The man's getting old also.
She's the one
who was taking care of the most.
What's she going to do now?
All those things is there. More women are working. She said that will change later because more women are working. All these elements, aspects are there. For the woman, she's more prone to feel, I denied my profession, or I took my profession. I took care of the family. I raised them. Now they're gone. What about me? Like she's done all of these things now. And although she's happy that her daughter is married, but her daughter is married and she's gone. Although she's happy, the son is married, but the son is married and he's gone. She's happy that he's gone off to university and he's going to get his degree and become doctor, lawyer, whatever. But at the same time, there's a part of her that feels, oh my God, they're gone. And I'm here. And now my husband is a little more free. And I'm here. And then in the secular world, you know what happens to the husband, huh? He's 50 years old now. And what happens? Huh? Starts looking at young girls 20, 22 years old. Huh? Here she's done all of this, taking care of the family. They're both older now. And the tendency is now he starts looking at a young girl, 24, 25. Thinking, oh, well, my wife, she used too many wrinkles. But now there's one thing interesting, and it's here in Europe also, more in America, is that women usually live longer than men. 6 or 7 years longer. So men better be careful, huh? Because often in our later years, we'll be getting taken care of by women, huh? So remember how you treated her. But, yes, so women usually, in general, they are still there when the husbands are dying, have died. So we see these things that are more prone, that are factors there. Women are more prone, less in control, hormonal influences a little more dominant, menopause, etc. This affects women in different ways, and many of our women are at that age now. Children leaving home early 20s, and so, I'm sorry, in their 20s, women are more likely to be very depressed. It's an interesting time, they're not teenagers anymore, they're now full adults, so to speak, but it's a very challenging time. And then later, in their 40s or early 50s. Some of the mothers may be experiencing some of that now, and you can understand that this is all part of the body. It's all part of the mind, and these things kind of come and go. They're less problematic when we are aware of them. It's like if you see a doctor, the doctor tells you, you take this pill, it's going to give you a headache, a stomach ache at first, and then a day or two, it'll be better. So by knowing that, then you're able to move through it a lot easier. But if you didn't know, it would be much greater problem. So what I want to do is give you an assignment for tomorrow, and then we'll open up for a few questions on what we discussed so far. One type of depression we're going to talk about tomorrow, and we'll finish this sheet hopefully tomorrow also, and move on to some other things. Hopefully this wasn't too technical. I tried to minimize a lot of the technical terms, but you just have the basic understanding. There's different types of depression. There's one type that's only just the low. There's another type that's kind of high. You're manic, excessive, and then you're very low. We looked at, we'll just summarize. So we talked about first what your understanding was of depression, and you gave us different things of how you saw depression based on your intellectual knowledge or what you have experienced. And some of you who may have constant issues with depression, you realize that how heavy it is. Just like if you have a physical handicap or something, and every day you're having to deal with that challenge. And so it is tremendous. And you can see why many people are even committing suicide because of not being able to cope. We mentioned how it's it's kind of an attribute for helping us to come to devotional service. Certain dysfunctional patterns or disturbances. And that's not bad. But it's bad if we do not become more spiritualized. Then we become sort of a problem in the community or in the environment or with our family, etc. But it may draw us to devotion, and that's good. Talking about the world, we ask about those of you who may have considered committing suicide before you join the movement. And before that, we asked those who were feeling very, very down before they came. And we saw so many who weren't thinking of suicide, but they were really, really desperate. And that was most of us, almost 80%. And then about a fourth of you was saying how you were literally in a suicidal mentality. Maybe some had even tried. And then because of that desperation and the piousness, then Krishna made himself available. We've even had cases where people were literally on their way to taking their lives when they saw Harinam Party, met the devotees, etc. Talked about psychosomatic diseases where the mind literally causes the body to experience illness. And how when the mind is not feeling satisfied or disturbed, that it literally attacks the cells in the body. So we have much more control of our health than we realize based on what's happening in the mind. And when the mind is not feeling satisfied, or you feel unloved or alienated, you're 4 to 5 times more susceptible to premature death and also to every kind of sickness. When there's stress, stress amplifies any type of problem. And the next day or two we'll talk about, you know, ways, solutions of getting around these things. You're more prone if you have someone in the family who's been an alcoholic or had some mental challenge. You're likely to be carrying some genes that's in connection with that, and that may make it a little more difficult for you to deal with such. That certain types of therapies can help you just by talk therapies. Some disclosure or resolutions can come about. Other types is based on some biological or chemical thing, and so there's a need for a special type. We talked about a little bit about ghosts and serial killers. Let me just end up with this story on Dr. Steve. I got a few more minutes, then we'll open up. And then we talked about women being more depressed than men. We looked at the less in control, menopause, what happens when children. And we didn't mention here before, misuse of Vedic culture. See, a lot of the things that we do in our Krishna consciousness is total perverted reflection of Vedic culture. For instance, the recent conference, two, 3 years ago, the women's conference in China, it was statistically proven that Indian women are the most abused women in the world. Now, why? It had a lot to do with the misuse of Vedic culture, where men are supposed to be protectors and more dominant and more caring, but that can be turned around and used in such an exploited way. Just like casteism, you know, Varnashram Dharma, perverted, is casteism. Or we see perverted also aspects of Vedic culture is we see Sahajiism. So many things that are extremely powerful, if they're not used properly, then they're that powerful in a negative way. So therefore we will find women being more depressed in Vedic oriented environments where it's not honestly being honored in a proper way. And so we have, unfortunately, in our society, we have a lot of our women who are heavily dealing with anxiety, stress, and depression, even more than the average norms, because of not feeling valued or because of exploitation of Vedic culture, etc. I was happy to see how we have here that the women are in the temple now, and then the men, and then the men will come later. And some men have never experienced that. It's good that we have a chance to experience that also. The chance that we honor each other in such ways. Not that we want to take away from proper etiquette, but we do want to see that everybody is enthused and enlivened in their services. And we are more into Bhagavad Dharma than even Vanashram Dharma. But this becomes an element, is that when someone does not feel properly valued, then more likely for mental distress, mental challenges. Before we open up a few questions, I'll tell you a little story here on number one under six, we have Bhakta Steve. Early in the movement, in New York, there was once this kind of strange devotee who was coming around the temple. His name was Bhakta Steve. And so Bhakta Steve, is your name Bhakta Steve? Okay. You've come back, huh? So, yes. So Bhakta Steve, he was a little eccentric, a little strange. And one day he disappeared. So Srila Prabhupada inquired, where was Bhakta Steve? Where is Bhakta Steve? And one of the devotees told Srila Prabhupada that Bhakta Steve had committed suicide. So Srila Prabhupada became very grave, and he became tearful, and he started speaking out like in a prayer. But first he said, Krishna has sent us this boy, and we have not properly taken care of him. And then Prabhupada started praying to Krishna, dear Krishna, wherever this boy is, please let him immediately come back into a devotee family, become a devotee. So Bhakti Steve was mentally challenged. And because he was suffering so much in material life, he came into the devotional community. But somehow he wasn't being treated nicely because he was a little strange. And that was so disturbing to him that here he was suffering materially, and then in the spiritual environment he was suffering. So he lost his desire to live. So he took his life. So Prabhupada was saying that Lord Caitanya has sent us this boy, and we have a duty to try to help him. Create an environment that will not cause Bhakti Steve's bad patterns to continue, but would also let him feel that he is appreciated so he can be able to work on himself. So here this person was not a devotee, a disciple, was not a grand disciple, was not even initiated devotee. But Srila Prabhupada was so much concerned about him, seeing that people will be sent to our movement. Many, many different reasons and many, many issues. And as long as, of course, they're not causing a big disturbance, then we should be able somehow to help them. But in some cases, we need trained people. I just sent a letter, maybe some of you saw it. I sent a letter just a few days ago to all of the GBCs and temple presidents, emphasizing that we really need to start looking at some of our devotees who may have potential to be trained professionally in therapy. Because as the problem increases in the world, increases in our society, that we need people who are devotees to address these issues. Because often when someone goes to karmic therapists, they reinforce the problem or make it worse. They make it worse sometimes by medication that they give and by some of the therapy. Sometimes, you know, these things must be done, it's emergencies. But often they make the problem worse. And often as they hear devotees speaking about our lifestyle, our understanding, they just see it as low self-esteem and they feel, well, you know, this is crazy, etc. So, but at the same time, if someone has these issues and they're not treated, then it can get worse. It can turn into what? I mean, I was, again, talking about our devotees getting sick. We have more devotees getting sick, more mothers getting cancer, and so many things. And a lot of this has to do with literally stress and the lack of feeling valued, etc. And then whatever little thing is there accelerates in various ways. So we don't want to just put ourselves at the hands of the material culture because it's dangerous. We talk about the mind. The body is a little more different, but the mind is even more delicate. But at the same time, we don't want to ignore these things because it's to be helped, but it's to be helped with the devotional understanding. So in this case, Bhakti Steve, he was feeling that there was no help for him, and he committed suicide, and Prabhupada was very sad. We don't want to have this happening. And I started speaking about these kind of issues just recently when I was in England some time back, and one of the devotees had committed suicide. And another devotee had been remitted in the same week or so to a mental institution in the manor, and then one in the Soho Street. So there was this general gloom in the whole temple. And so I was going to speak on one topic, but then I did a sort of a short little seminar, just a one day, 2 or 3 hour thing, on some of these issues. And then just a month ago, I was in Malaysia at a conference. And I spoke about these things a little more in depth, like I'll do this week. And I had 400 people in my class. And it was only about 700 people in the whole conference. But so many people had been directly dealing with the issue, or had relatives, or someone who's close to them, who was going through all kind of mental challenges. And of course, as we mentioned, some of you probably have noticed, especially within the last 5 to 6 months, that people are seeing that they're feeling more challenged probably than ever before in their spiritual life. And that's because, as we said, a lot of the influx of negative energy that's there, and people getting possessed, and people getting so bombarded by other people who are carrying so much heavy energy. And as we move around them, we get affected in various ways. So my time is just about up, but let's see with a few short questions you might have, so that we can move tomorrow with we'll try to move into some other topics where we can interact a little bit more. Yes. Now, will you be able to hear them if they speak? Or do they need this microphone? She can just speak loud.
When you spoke about the importance of devotees being properly integrated into devotional communities, could you elaborate a little bit?
Yes, she's asking, when I spoke about devotees being properly integrated into devotional communities. One example is Bhakti Steve. Bhakti Steve had some spiritual credits. The fact that his frustrations brought him into the devotional environment. So there was some piousness that was there, that he said yes to Krishna, or tried to say yes. Now, he was not properly integrated. In this case, it seemed it was more the weakness of the community, because we were just unused to, you know, kind of strange people, and people probably felt he's just a disturbance, he just dressed weird, looks weird, you know, and treated him harsh. So here, that dysfunctional pattern was instrumental in him coming to devotional service. But because he was not getting, didn't get the proper help, then it became even worse. Or someone comes, and the help is available, but they do not work on themselves sufficiently. Then they become a problem to the community. Or they may even get worse. And we'll explain that in the next few days, why sometimes you can come into devotional service, and the problem you have, and it can actually get worse. These things you don't hear so much, but, you know, we want to talk about some of these issues. Yes?
How should Srila Prabhupada's statement be understood that the temple is not a place for lazies and crazies?
Exactly. But at the same time, Prabhupada was also saying that basically everyone is crazy, more or less crazy. So it means, though, if someone... Prabhupada's formula basically was that if someone has a problem, we try to help them. But when their problem is interfering with the serious devotees, then we have to look at it close and make some serious decisions. See, if someone is having a problem, I mean, they're working on themselves, we're helping them, they're going on, no problem. But now if that person's problem is such that they're trying to run on this altar and act like Krishna or something, or they're bothering other devotees, then they're not fit for living, you know, in a community environment. They need additional help before they can be living in a community.
Mm-hmm. You were speaking about multiple personalities, and you said this is when one is intruded by ghosts. So I wanted to know, can it also be that the self, I don't know the English expression, makes such other personalities to protect herself in maybe in the case of sexual abuse?
It's a very good point.
That the person herself does not have to experience this, but makes other personalities who experiences to different persons.
Yes, I'll give an example. The question is, sometimes I'm saying someone is acting in a way as if they were possessed, or they are possessed. So she's asking, but in some cases, may it be that the person has sort of done this to themselves based on something that's happened in their life, some abuse, and they have created sort of an altered personality. Yes. There are ways that people are being... This is a little heavy. There's some people in the world now who are being trained to be sex slaves, to be espionage agents, etc. This happens a lot on high level in government. A lot of strange things go on in the United Nations and with presidents of countries. So I interact sometimes with these people. I know some of the things they do. And so sometimes they train up people. They breed people sometimes to be messengers, carriers. And one of the ways they train them, they use incest, but then they train them by brutalizing them. And by brutalizing a person in certain ways, you sometimes can get that person to have altered personalities. Like they can shift into different personalities. Some people who are mentally ill now, they have two or three different personalities. One of my disciples is a psychotherapist. He was telling me only 2 days ago, 3 days ago, of a client that she has who has like about two or three personalities. And so she's getting the client to talk, and the client was telling her two things. One, how when she was a small girl, her brothers and cousins used to tie her up, threaten her with a little knife, and they would rape her. And also her father, who was an alcoholic, that sometimes, not sometimes, for many, many years, when the father would come home, especially on weekends, the mother would put the child in the bed, her bed, she would leave, so the father would bother the girl instead of her. So what this girl had happened by so much abuse from her brothers, from her cousins, from her father, so she would just shift personality. She had ability, what happened is that when she was in pain, then she could shift to another personality, like to another person. So there are people who have these split personalities, some cases where they've been groomed like that for different reasons, and other cases where they've had some trauma in their life, and so they really can just shift. And just, you know, the personality thinks differently, even talks differently, acts, feels differently, and often has to do with certain pain that one has experienced, and they're blotting out that pain. So this can, it can be very dominant, and it can be some light cases of this also. One or two other questions. But it just shows again how powerful the mind is, and how the mind is imbibing so many things in the environment that will affect, you know, the physical state. When you think of the tremendous number of people who have been abused or have been challenged in this way, you can see why there's so much scattered mental energy. Yes.
Just a question. I think of this game, PlayStation. The children, I have seen many children using this PlayStation game.
What is it? I don't know what it is.
I don't know. It's a
computer game.
Computer.
I had it. And it does what?
In this game, it's like a computer. You kill so many people. You kill. There's blood. There's you use so many guns. So many.
Very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
I keep saying what I'm going to talk about. There's many things we could talk about. One day I'm going to talk about, as I said, a different altered states. There's one state that's next to the normal waking state. In Sanskrit, we have Jagrat is the waking state, and then we have Swapana, dream state. In Western science, they have what's called beta and alpha. We'll come back to that later. But alpha, in general, what it means, it's the next state down from the waking. You are aware, but you're somewhat not fully aware of the immediate environment. For instance, when you watch television, some of you noticed in one or two of the books I wrote, and in my recent book, I just finished a book about 2 weeks ago, Spiritual Warrior 3. In that book, I talk a little bit more about the effects of television. Oh. When you watch TV, it has a way to put the mind in an alpha state. An alpha state is like a slight hypnotic state where you are there, but you're not fully there. Notice sometimes somebody's watching television, you come into the room, you know, and you call your son, Govinda, Govinda! Had to call him three times, huh? Because he's just there. And you call him and you kind of snap him up. So it's like a slight hypnotic state where one becomes about four times more susceptible to whatever the impressions are, more than one normally would. Normally you're weeding things out, evaluating. And so, and it's, you know, it's understood. You're at home and you're in your comfortable chair, you're eating some popcorn and some glove jammies, and you're watching television. And so you kind of relax, you know, and the ice cream comes in. And so what happens is that your defenses are down. And what comes across now is entering into the consciousness. And sometimes by, like in America, for instance, by the time a child is 18 years old, that child has already seen about something like 400,000 acts of violence and about 50,000, you know, you see murders. So it's a tremendous diet. And in some parts of Europe and parts of America, people watching TV about 5 hours a day, 5 to 6 hours a day. So that in the computer is definitely having an effect. And it's, you know, it affects the nervous system. It affects consciousness. Remember, when you see things on television, say for instance you see some horror, you see some sex scene, it puts imprints in the mind. And for quite a while, you'll get flashbacks. You see? And often, you'll feel stimulated in such ways. So it's very delicate what we're hearing and what we're seeing. And especially now that there's people who literally are putting things on TV, in the music, such that it can bring people's consciousness down. You know, there are people who are pretty much involved in power, and they're empowered for destruction. And so they're literally trying to harness others' minds. Some of the music now, you play the lyrics backwards, and it's chants to Satan. Some of the imagery, you know, is sinful in that way. And so when the mind is taken in this to such things, it gets influenced by such. And there's the opposite. There's also people who know about these things, and they're doing relaxation music. They're doing music that helps to stimulate the consciousness and whatnot. So one or two more, then we had better stop.
About reading.
Reading? Well, let's...
For instance...
So I'll take your own example. Having sometimes you read a horror book, and then you start dreaming about it, and you start having some trouble later. Or you read some, romance, and you get sexually stimulated in this way. So that is there. But what you see and hear is even stronger. It even has a greater effect. We realize that, you know, the power of mantra.
Yes, I just was thinking, the imagination is more powerful than what you see. Because if you see, it goes directly, you don't really think about it. Because if you read the book and you think about it, you imagine it yourself, so it has imagination.
Both things are there. What you see affects also your imagination. What you hear affects your imagination. What you previously saw and heard affects your imagination. And we'll end with that. See, at any given time, you can see how dynamic it is. Any given time, what we're thinking has to do with previous karma, previous experiences. Some things we're conscious of, some things we're not conscious of. I'll speak about that I talk about Vishwanath Chakravarti tomorrow in Bhagavatam class, and I'll discuss some of those aspects of karma. And now, at any given time, what we're experiencing, it's like in this room now, there's a certain collective consciousness in the room, based on our individual consciousness. So somebody is, you know, when we first start off, somebody is saying, depression, why am I in this room? Someone is saying, I'm depressed, maybe he can help me. Someone else is thinking, maybe I can help my brother, cousin, uncle, niece, nephew, brother, etc. You know, people thinking different things. Someone is saying, this is the guy who writes those strange books. I wonder if he talks like this, like he writes in his books. You know, all kind. So all of these thoughts are in the atmosphere. Okay? And it makes up a certain mood. And so at any given time, we're literally influencing each other by what we're thinking, what we're doing. And as we're trying to be dasos me, we're trying to be servants of each other, we want to be thinking devotionally, acting devotionally, so that the things that we do as well as what we bring to an environment acts in such a way to remind each other more of Krishna. In this way. So tomorrow we want you to do one little assignment, which we'll open up in with. Notice on your sheet. Let's see, number. You go all the way down to number 10. Homework assignment. Time you felt Krishna had abandoned you, to later realize that Krishna was giving you special mercy. In other words, one of the types of depressions that we go to as spiritualists is there are times when we just feel that everything is like so horrible or so many problems or some issue in our life that we feel as if Krishna himself, excuse me, has seemingly forgotten about us or has abandoned us Or maybe Krishna is taking a vacation and somehow we missed out before he left. But there are times when we may have that experience where we feel so intense about something that it seems like Krishna has forsaken us, so he's abandoned us. Abandonment is one serious area that people often feel depression. So we'd like you to think about that. And then, but a case where you felt that that was happening, but really it was the opposite. What was really going on is that Krishna was facilitating you. He was helping you. He was arranging. He did something before a higher reason. And while you were experiencing it, it did seem like abandonment. But later you can understand that there was a higher reason, that it was really Krishna giving you mercy, etc. So you think about that, you know, this evening. And tomorrow we'll try to address that as we look a little closer at some of these issues. So keep your papers and reflect on some of these issues. And remember that so much of the world is going to be experiencing this, so we want to try to use whatever we can to try to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission. ISKCON Founder Charter, Srila Prabhupada ki. And if you don't have one, perhaps you can look on over somebody's shoulder. ISKCON Founder Charter, Srila Prabhupada ki. See Radha Gopinath ji ki, Vaishnav Thakur ki. So, we had a little homework assignment. I'm not going to update because I did pretty much in the class, at least about a half of what we discussed. For some of you who are just coming for today's session the first time, if you want to get more information about the things we discussed, I think the tapes will be available after the sessions. But our homework assignment was to explore times that we felt that we had been abandoned by Krishna. As we're looking at depression from so many, many ways, different perspectives. And one particular cause of depression is a sense of abandonment. Now this happens socially or secularly, as well as there's a spiritual aspect to it. We first just look very briefly. Some people, from a secular perspective, some people carry for most of their lives a sense of abandonment. People who often were adopted as a child, because in the back of their minds they're always wondering why their parents didn't keep them, have a sense of abandonment. And so things that may not disturb the average person who hasn't had that experience, such persons are more prone to be disturbed by it. Sometimes when a person is brought up by a one-parent family, then there may be a rather strong personality trait that's there, a sense of abandonment. And in cases where someone has had an alcoholic parent or a drug parent, where, especially at a young age, there was a longing to connect, to be loved, to be cared for, to be protected by a particular person, but it wasn't coming. And so such persons will often carry, sometimes for the rest of their life, this sense of abandonment. But we wanted to look at it from a spiritual perspective. As we were talking about, there are different experiences that we undergo as we are trying to be devotees. Sometimes we're doing the right thing, we just can't figure out what's happening. There are many times that we're doing the right thing, and because we're doing the right thing, that Krishna is speeding things up. There are periods in our life when it just seems like one problem after another. Sometimes it's actually a benediction, because Krishna is seeing that someone is trying and they're on the jet path. And so one is getting many tests, many challenges, because Krishna is seeing, oh, you're coming to me and you're all for me and I'm all for you, and therefore we're going to remove all types of things that are distracting. And we know the conception of akinchana, when special situations, when Krishna intervenes to give special attention to someone who is genuinely trying to come to him. So this is quite an interesting phenomenon, and it is very difficult, as we were saying earlier, when this is happening. And in many cases, without proper association, and sometimes without proper association and guidance, one will have not only trouble, but one will be a failure. Because while you are undergoing such, All you can basically feel is the anxiety, the pain, the frustration, the depression, and the gloom, etc. But as we become more cognizant of why such things are happening, then we know that seasonal change is there. We know that we're going to move through it, and we understand that it has some healthy particular reasons. It's like there are certain types of medicine, I think homeopathic medicine and a few others, that when you take it, sometimes it makes the problem worse. Or certain medicines, they bring out the toxins and the problem seemingly gets worse before it gets better. But it's getting worse because the issue is actually being addressed. That aspect of the body is really being addressed. And so the body is going through certain transitions. So we know that Krishna sometimes creates situations that helps to increase our intensity, helps us to look closer at our anarthas, at our weeds, helps us to look closer at our stagnations. And these situations can accelerate success, but they also can bring on failure.